All right, it's 7:17. The fight over Dreamers leading to the government shutdown to the ongoing conflict in the Middle East. U.S. Senator Tim Kaine joining us live by phone to talk about these and other issues in Washington. Senator Kaine, good morning.
Hey, guys. Good to be with you today.
Thank you so much for taking the time to join us. At this time, Senator Kaine, we'll turn it over to WFIR's Ian Price and Lillian Boyd.
Super. Thanks.
Hey, Senator Kaine. This is Ian Price.
So, hey, Ian, good to be with you today.
Nice to talk to you. A report from the New York Times says President Trump considered firing special counsel Robert Mueller until White House lawyer Don McGahn threatened to resign. The president's called the report fake news. What consequences do you believe would result from the president if he had fired Mueller over the summer or if he did sometime in the future?
Well, I think Congress would strike back very quickly. It would also, I think, almost be kind of an admission of guilt in this obstruction of justice probe that's taking place right now. Remember, Mueller got his job because after the firing of Jim Comey, there was a question about whether that was an effort to obstruct the investigation into charges that the Trump campaign cooperated with the Russian government to hack the American presidential election. So Mueller was appointed to look at that charge. If Trump made an effort to fire Mueller, that would be very powerful evidence in favor of this obstruction of justice charge. And so it would have significant consequences. And I think Congress would step up very strongly to put the president in check if he tried to fire Mueller or preemptively pardon witnesses or take other steps that would demonstrate an intent to obstruct the investigation.
Hi, Senator. This is Lillian Boyd. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, Lillian, you bet.
So let's switch it over to the shutdown. On Friday, you voted against the House-passed stopgap spending bill that arguably would have kept the government open. But in an interview with NPR, you said if the government shuts down, it will be because of Republicans. Is there a bit of blame game going on, or are both sides of the aisle responsible?
Well, look, both sides are, but here was the problem. To get a vote on a spending bill, you have to have Democratic votes in the Senate, and the Republicans know that. You can't do it just with Republican votes. It takes 60 votes. So normally what they would do is negotiate with us, okay, we want to keep it open. Here's what we want to do. They didn't do that this time. The House wrote a bill. They sent it to the Senate Thursday night. We went to the Republican leadership and said, we don't like this bill. You haven't talked to us. Let's vote it down tonight, and then we'll spend all day Friday negotiating so we can keep the government open. The Republican leadership said, we won't let you vote on it. We're going to put the vote up right before midnight Friday, so you'll have to vote yes. Well, we don't have to vote yes. The bill was a bad bill. We had the Secretary of Defense telling us not to vote for it because it was bad for the military. And we also wanted a commitment from Republicans at least agree with us that you'll take up the issue of the Dreamers, which you've been avoiding for years. So because they just put the vote up right before midnight and wouldn't negotiate at all, I voted for it. It was a bad bill for the military, and we needed a commitment on Dreamers.
We're going to talk about Dreamers in a moment.
Senators, over the weekend, we went to our leadership. We said, don't try to jam us. The parties have to work together. And when we pressured the Democratic and Republican leadership, we came up with a deal to make sure government was open, to fund CHIP for 6 years for kids, and also to guarantee that the Dreamers would get their day on the floor of the Senate.
All right, we're speaking with U.S. Senator Tim Kaine. Senator, the Republican vying for your spot, Corey Stewart, issued a release criticizing you for your willingness to hold federal employees and the military hostage. Do you have a response directly for Mr. Stewart?
Yeah, my response is Secretary James Mattis, the Secretary of Defense, and I'm on the Armed Services Committee. He came to the Senate Democrats about 8 days before last Friday and said, do not do another continuing resolution that has no path to finding funds for the military. He told us the continuing resolutions were hurting the military and it was time to get to a regular budget. What the Republicans proposed to do last Friday night was directly contrary to what the Secretary of Defense said should be done. In fact, so much so that as the House was Morgan and the House were voting on that bill, the spokesperson for the Pentagon was putting out a statement saying this is bad for defense. We have to get off the continuing resolution mania and really do real budgeting again if we want to protect the military. I got a child in the military. This matters a lot to me personally. So the deal that we struck over the weekend and on Monday with leadership gets us not only a government that's open and CHIP funding, but it also puts us on a path to negotiate a final budget, including defense spending, and find a path forward for Dreamers.
Senator, the Trump administration has been in power for over a year now. A lot of domestic issues are always in the forefront, but the ongoing conflict in the Middle East has sort of taken a back seat. So have lawmakers been given any updates on ISIS's presence in the Middle East and just kind of how the conflict is going?
Yes, actually, I'm going to give the administration a little credit on this one. The Trump administration's national security team, Secretary Mattis, General McMaster, the head of the Joint Chiefs, General Dunford, very, very solid team. And they actually just carried forward with the Obama plan to defeat ISIS. There really hasn't been any change in the plan. And it's worked. At least sort of phase one of the battle against ISIS is working. You know, you remember in the summer of 2014, ISIS controlled massive amounts of real estate in Iraq and Syria. The U.S. together with other nations have squeezed them down. And within the last couple of months, we've really beaten them in Iraq. There's still remnants. And we've dramatically beaten them in Syria. So that's good. Here's the challenge that we all have to grapple with now. ISIS knows that they've lost on the battlefield, and they know that they can't win on the battlefield. So what they're likely to do now is try to inspire attacks here, there, and everywhere, a bombing in Paris or taking down a commercial airliner over the Sinai or inspiring a splinter group in the Philippines or in Africa. So now the ISIS battle is sort of moving in a very diffuse way that involves a different kind of a military strategy, sharing intelligence with other nations, working in tandem with other nations to defeat ISIS presence in the region. But at least the success of the U.S. military with colleagues on the battlefield has been very, very notable, and we owe thanks to the military. But I also think the Trump national security team has done a good job in that in the first year.
And to go back to DACA, you've said that if we don't find a permanent solution for DACA, the consequences to these young people are serious. What kind of consequences do you think natural-born citizens face, just so people who aren't immigrants really understand the consequences of not finding a solution?
If you go non-DACA, 80 to 90% of the American public support finding a solution for Dreamers. So the Dreamers cause, you know, brought here by their parents in most instances, you know, they didn't know where they were going. They just wanted to be with mom or dad. The American public overwhelmingly supports finding a solution for them. And the good news is President Trump does too. President Trump said two nights ago, we ought to find a solution for these Dreamers. We've got 13,000 in Virginia. I've met so many of them. They're really great kids studying, working in the military. President Trump said we ought to find a solution for them, and I agree. And I think that the deal is a fairly obvious one, which is find protection for Dreamers and make investments in border security. Both things would be good to do. Both things are overwhelmingly supported by the American public.
Okay, Senator, just about a minute left, so I want to do one last question. Talk about tourism. NBC reports that it's costing $4.6 billion and 40,000 jobs. The president's overseas right now. He's pushing an America First economy, saying America's open for business. Do you think that we're doing enough to create jobs around the country and specifically in Virginia?
Well, no. I mean, look, we're doing some things. You know, the governors, 50 governors are doing job creation. Some of the economic stats, stock market now are good, but there are some challenges. And one is the president's anti-immigration rhetoric, whether it's around Dreamers or whether it's around the Muslim travel ban that he announced in January or whether it's using vulgar expressions to refer to other countries. Here is a weakness. Tourism is a really important industry in Virginia and in the country, and the tourism industry is dramatically down during the first year of the Trump administration, especially visitors from abroad. They view the U.S. as a more hostile place under the Trump administration, and they're choosing to go elsewhere. And that's the NBC story that you reported, billions of dollars lost in tourism. I hear this when I talk to hoteliers, when I talk to folks who operate, you know, tourist venues, you know, amusement parks and things like that. Foreign visitors now are saying, you know, we don't know whether we're going to be welcome in the U.S. Let's go somewhere else. And we're seeing the same trend in foreign students wanting to come to American universities. As you know, in-state students in Virginia pay less, out-of-state students pay more. Foreign students pay the full freight, and because they do, that helps keep costs a little bit lower for in-states. The number of foreign students is starting to decline fairly significantly because they're also choosing to apply for universities in other countries. That's not a good thing for us. It doesn't help our innovation.
All right. Thank you so much, U.S. Senator Tim Kaine.
Thank you for joining us, Senator.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
All right. That has been U.S. Senator Tim Kaine with us this morning on the Roanoke Valley's Morning News.